following podcast has adult themes and some strong language.
Welcome to Season 2, Episode 1. I'm back then. Believe me, no one is more surprised than me. I didn't think I had the heart to do this again, but strange things have happened. Like Stranger Things on Netflix, which brought that awful song to a new generation. I started getting this together a few months ago. I'm speaking this from the present, well-ish, not live. I started this again back at the end of April, and so much has happened since then, it feels like it's happened to another person. The best place to start, though, is at the beginning, so here we go. I began by listening to my podcasts again, and apart from the fact I hated listening to my voice, and apparently so did you with the downloads, it felt like it was coming from a different person from a different time. I know I kept banging on about how good The Office was, when I really wanted to talk about the other Ricky Gervais programme, Afterlife. Still don't know if I can talk about it now. There are many things that struck me listening to the podcasts. Some I won't be discussing here. Well, not yet, anyway. The most popular episode was the Halloween one where I barely talked about me. I'm going to take it that's because everyone likes a spooky story about what may or may not have happened. I mean, what I said happened, but the fact I could have been a victim of a wind-up. I think the thing that struck me most, though, was how stuck I was, literally and metaphorically. That's taken up most of my thoughts, and it's scary. It's not like I have years left in this world to remedy this. Soon, my 40s will be over. If not now, then when? The thing that scared me more than anything, though, was, why did I pick that god-awful theme tune? I thought I'd start with some interesting facts loosely based on life. 1. The night sky is the closest thing we have to a time machine and the ability to visit the past. This is because it takes starlight so long for us to see it. Some of the brightest stars are light we are seeing from 25 years ago. However, some stars may be over 650 years old. Feel relatively young now. 2. If you think that's impressive though, the Hubble telescope can see back over 13 billion years. Didn't it also create the Mandela effect? 3. It takes the sun 225 million years to travel around our galaxy. The last time the sun was in this position then, early dinosaurs started to roam the Earth. And I don't mean in Jurassic Park. 4. A year on Venus is shorter than a day. This is because the rotation is so slow. It goes round the sun quicker than it rotates fully. 5. Although it's never been proven, or may never can be, several branches of mathematics, quantum mechanics, and astrophysics have all come to similar conclusions. Our universe is just one of many, and we actually exist in a multiverse. Why? Because it offers the best solution of what is known about how our universe works. In theory, there could be infinite me's really successful at life in other universes. One's a film star, one's a martial arts expert, one has hot dog fingers. Yes, I am stealing a plot of Everything Everywhere All at Once. Only because it's so good. 6. The human brain is the most complex object in the known universe. It gives us the power to form language and culture, consciousness, the idea of self, and the ability to learn. It's thought that a human brain can compute 38,000 trillion executions each second. Compare this to some of the world's most proficient computers, which are only able to work around 1% of this power. Although some people use their brain so little, you wouldn't know. I know. I've been on Twitter. 7. You can't breathe and swallow at the same time. No glib response here. 8. There are more than the usual quoted 5 senses of sight, touch, taste, smell, and hearing. These include thirst, suffocation, pain, balance, and time. 9. Working makes you live longer. Studies, yes, I'm putting that in inverted commas, suggest that working beyond the age of retirement may lead to a longer life. Yeah, nice try, Tory party. Adding to that, sleep is important if you want to live longer. You need at least 7 hours sleep at night, which is bad news for us insomniacs. 10. The shade of dark grey you see when there's no light has a name. Eigengrau. Look it up. I probably haven't got the pronunciation right. I wonder if there's a name for that deep, dark dread you feel too. Mae West said, "You only live once, but if you do it right, once is enough." I think I need about another 3 goes. I can't believe it was only a year ago that we were in some sort of shut-off from the world. I'm now out in it, not confidently, I would add. I still want people to back the fuck off, but I'm not sure if that was a pandemic anyway. I'd done everything I wanted to do, like cinema, theatre and restaurants. Can't say I'm keen though on going to a busy pub and have rejected the idea so far. I also caught COVID. Not the Omicron, but the Delta version. I'm going to go through some ink, it's got to be thorough. 3 weeks I was in bed. Actually, not even in bed. Downstairs on my settee because it was close to the kitchen and the toilet. I wasn't sick enough to go to the hospital, but not well enough to do anything. I went 3 days during a bad time unable to shower. I know, keep it light. If you know me though, you'd know how bad that was. I washed though in the sink. I managed the stairs the rest of the time though, and some days it only took me 30 minutes one way. I haven't got a lot of time for people who say it's just a cold. Lucky for them if it was. For some, is anything but. It was November and I still hadn't really been out. Luckily for me, I had Satan's dark overlord in my life in the form of my friend M's son, Samuel. He caught it in school but wasn't ill with it. It was just everyone around him. I didn't see or really hear from Em's during that time period. She was ill herself for a week and then her husband Simon was. My friend Izzy came around and left me food on the doorstep, but I didn't see her, not that I would have let her in. I couldn't take food deliveries myself because I didn't have the energy to take it from the driver, and of course I wouldn't want to pass it on. The one person I did see was Ben. He insisted on coming around to restock the fridge, put a pile of soup on the hob, which I just microwaved in mugs, and checked in on me. He had all the doors and windows open, so it was freezing. I only saw him as he left the house. Him on the doorstep, me by my living room door. Once he took his mask off briefly and said, "Yeah, I still would," which really made me laugh because he definitely wouldn't. He didn't even look like me, it was so bad. He did that 3 times, once every week, and no, we are now not a couple. Em's and Izzy called him a chancer on our New Year's Eve meetup. I said nothing. Because I didn't bite, they started winding me up again about writing. Was this year I was going to write my opus? Weirdly, I didn't tell them about this podcast. They still don't know. Now, there's a couple of things here. They both do Facebook, whereas I don't do Facebook, but other social media. I'm not actually lying to them either, because all they talk about is me writing fiction, and this isn't. The other thing is I'm writing fiction too. They're just not going to read it. Well, not yet, anyway. Couldn't bring myself to show them, but when I listened back to my podcasts again and the way I talked about them, I realised why. That's not the only reason, though, and I'll come back to it. Albert Einstein said, "Life is like riding a bicycle. To keep your balance, you must keep moving." Next. This one went a bit deep, but I looked up the meaning of life. Of course we know it's 42, but beyond that, does anyone really know? American author Thomas Merton stated that love is our true destiny. We do not find the meaning of life by ourselves alone. We find it with another. Of course, as a novelist, it's always a good idea to sell a fantasy, and it props up the patriarchy, so why not utter this bollocks? Austrian psychologist Viktor E. Frankl stated that challenging the meaning of life is the truest expression of the state of being human. Now that makes more sense. We are not the same person we were 10 years ago. Even if we feel stuck, so our perceptions have to change over time. What was true for you then isn't necessarily true for you now. Arnold Schwarzenegger said life was continuously feeling hungry. I know how that feels, but he wasn't talking about dieting. He went on, "The meaning of life is simply not to exist, to survive, but to move ahead, to go up, to achieve, to conquer." So, is the meaning of life to get to the top of your chosen field? Or rise so high you get to spend a pandemic with a pet donkey? Life goals. Leo Tolstoy would disagree. He stated the sole meaning of life is to serve humanity. That said, the only reason I know that is because Tolstoy did rise to the top of his field. Actor Alan Alda put it more simply that the meaning of life is life. However, we all want to look outside ourselves to find the missing pieces. Many find it in religion, and I find that really lovely. To follow a certain path and to come together at certain times. The problem I have is with the made-up stuff by men. I mean literally men, not mankind, who speak all manner of bollocks of how others, mainly women, definitely poor, should live their lives. I'm not foolish enough to go down this road, but I do remember Jesus was quoted as saying, "It is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to get into heaven." So why anyone listens to rich Christians is beyond me. Joseph Campbell had a more philosophical approach where he stated life is without meaning. You bring the meaning to it. The meaning of life is whatever you ascribe it to be. Being alive is the meaning. He is right, we could go around this for weeks, months, years, and we find there's no meaning other than what we're doing right now. The scariest part is there is probably no meaning. We are here by some cosmic accident. In 2011, Dr. Ali Banerjee attempted to answer the question of the odds of being born. This taking into account of your parents' meeting, getting together, etc. For example, my parents didn't live in the same country when they met. He did the maths and it was something like 1 in 400 trillion, effectively zero. We are basically miracles, but we sit there thinking or writing in my case, what is the meaning of life? It is crazy. I would leave it with one of my favourite actors, Michael Sheen, talking about the play Hamlet, who said, "Hamlet is one of the most dangerous things ever sat down on paper. All the big and noble questions like what it is to be a human being, the difference between sanity and insanity, the meaning of life and death, what's real and not real. All these subjects can literally drive you mad." And that's why I'm going to leave it there. After spending 3 weeks of doing nothing but watch television, I needed a palate cleanser. Yes, we're in the golden age of television, but sometimes you need time away. I'd lost my fitness levels. Even after I began work again, the shortest walk left me breathless and I needed a lie down. My heart rates didn't return to any sort of normality for about 3 months. That was a slow road back to fitness, or my version of it anyway. I would spend my lunchtime just walking around the block, then more than one block, and then on to the park. I didn't use the treadmill again until about March. I lost weight during the illness, quite a bit, but it made my face look gaunt and older. I thought, there's a compromise here, but as soon as I started eating properly, and then Christmas came, I went back to normal weight. I started to read more. On my walks, I would put on headphones and listen to books instead of music. People who say that listening to books is not reading can do one. My pronunciation of words might even improve. I was listening to and reading more, both at the same time, and you can do both on Kindle. Sometimes 2 or 3 books at a time, a mixture of fiction and fact, or author facts anyway. As I hinted at in my Halloween ep, I'm having a bit of an existential crisis, made worse by being ill as I was. I started looking at self-help. I was wrote off things like how the universe was looking out for you and you create your world, and I was probably right too. However, when you go deeper into the subject, it started making a bit more sense. On a superficial level, the very act of wanting something badly enough the universe will give it to you is nonsense. I will never change my view on that. I don't even really understand what is meant by the universe, and you won't get definitive answers either, but some refer it to as a god, a higher power, or vibrations around you. I know I'm losing you, but stick with this. You might learn something. To ask for what you want, you need to know what that actually is. That is not so easy to define, unless it's I want to win the lottery, which even then you have to make it a bit more than that. I don't think winning £2.71 on Euro Millions is going to change your life. I think you're wasting your time on that one though. The odds of getting 6 numbers are something like 1 in 45 million. For the purposes of this though, you'd be better off putting your energy towards something else. It's your intentions that matter. If you make the decision to do something and focus your energy on doing that, then the universe will reward you with it. That last bit I'm not so sure of. The rest makes sense though. You will recognize more opportunities because your mind is focused on seeing those opportunities. A lot of you are going, well done, Jess, I worked this out when I was 15. Well, well done you. I didn't. Honestly, all I ever thought about is what I didn't want. Apparently, that's what you attract, though. Not for me. I didn't have what I didn't want. Well, what was in my power anyway. Well, back to what you want. I know I'm all over the place with this one. In the new year, it was time to sit down and think about what I want. I always wanted to be a writer. It was the most obvious one. It stuck with me all my life and the reason why I'm doing this now. I needed to work out what that meant. What did I want to write? Was it short stories, novels, plays, screenplays, you know? The answer was all of it, but you must sit with intention and drill down what you want, and I ended up with a novel. Yes, I know the whole world and its wife thinks they've got a book inside them, but does the whole world sit down and actually do the work to get it done? No. Although a lot of people are doing just that. So, how do you write a book? Sit down, chapter one, let's go. I'm sure that's how some people do it, but most not. You must do some training. The more I investigated it, the more I realised what I didn't know. I mean, if you don't know the steps of the hero's journey, have you any business being a writer? Well, that was the first thing I learned. Not the hero's journey, I studied English Lit. It was just what other people told me I should know. Not everyone is the expert they claim to be, though, and half the battle was to find out about people who I resonated with. Read their stuff, learn what I could about them, and keep going. The first couple of months, I was doing just that. Even did some online training and seminars. I got stuck again like I did last year and realised I had to sit down and just write. So I did. William W. Perkey, the noted writer, researcher, speaker and leader said, "You've got to dance like there's nobody watching. Love like you'll never be hurt. Sing like there's nobody listening and live like it's heaven on earth." It's a lovely concept. As I stated earlier, I started to write again, but this time with intention. I did an online writing course and so I ended up on a company mailing list. I had an email from her one day and it had emblazed on the subject title, "Get the last place on the Easter Brighton Writers Retreat." I already knew about it and had dismissed it because although it looked great, I wasn't a writer, so that was that. I was about to delete, but something made me read further. Someone had dropped out and because the course was so soon, they were offering at a special rate and to click to find out more. There was no way I was going to go on a writer's retreat because only real writers did that and I couldn't possibly consider myself a real writer. I clicked the link anyway. There it was. There was no way I was going to pay that though for 5 days away with real writers and worse than that, complete strangers to me. So I found it really weird that I started to complete the form. It was COVID too. What happens if one of them had COVID and made me ill again? But by that stage, I was checking my answers on the form. This was getting ridiculous because I wasn't a writer. I was a fraud and as soon as they saw me, they'd know and wonder why I paid good money to come to a course that was for writers. It was in the fucking title, Writer's Retreat. I must have been on autopilot though because I saw the big blue button that stated, confirm. It had gone too far because there was no way I could take time off to go to Brighton to spend time with complete strangers who were actually real breathing writers. And I was some idiot with a corporate role who had a stupid dream about being a writer, even though people like me are not writers and never become writers. Then I had a complete and utter meltdown because somehow I pressed confirm. I would say I was back in the office, but I never really went back. The company was bought by a big American organisation and the first thing they did was to close the Cardiff base. I thought, well, that was that. I was planning to take the redundancy money and finally open my coffee shop bookstore. Back in reality, I was terrified. The thought of starting again, what I could lose. It didn't happen. Some were asked to relocate and I was one of them. It was to another factory on the outskirts of one of the valleys. If I said where, you'd know with a short Google search who I work for, so I won't. I must be in the office 2.5 days a week, so that's better for me. My job title changed to assistant manager. I know, it sounds like I'm picking the plot of The Office. I was definitely assistant manager and not assistant to the operations manager. Also, the new boss wasn't a chilled out entertainer, which was kind of disappointing. It's a promotion with no pay rise, but because of my increased travel time, it did come with a flashy company car that I am not keen on. My car knowledge is weak. Is it functional? Yes. Does it have stupid stickers on it? No. That'll do then. I moved at the end of February. There were and are some teething problems. For a start, everyone there hates me, which is a minor inconvenience. Okay, maybe I'm being dramatic. Maybe it's only 98%. There's Sarah, who's front of house, who likes me, but she came from Cardiff and has known me for a while. From what I can gather, I am up myself, I have a chip on my shoulder, I am flashy with my car, and I think I'm better than them. The last one is hurtful. I've had that levelled at me before, and it's always been about the fact that I'm not super attractive or bubbly or tell my life story within seconds of meeting someone. I don't think people are beneath me, though. Tended to be rather jealous of what other people have. Honestly, if they think I think I'm better than them because of my job, then they don't know the criteria I judge people. There are people who earn far more than me, a lot of them running the country who I have nothing but contempt for. I'm hoping when it calms down a bit, they will see that. I don't need them to like me, just not actively wish me gone. This is part of a problem that I need to address because there are rumours going around that I don't know where they came from. Things that I've said and done, which, if they were true, they should hate me. I have my suspicions, and I really hope I'm wrong, because the thought of what I must do makes me sick to the stomach. Nobel laureate André Gide wrote, "It is better to be hated for what you are than to be loved for what you are not." This is true, but just once, I would really like to be loved for what I am. After my meltdown over applying to the writer's retreat, I calmed down. I could email and say I couldn't make it. It was cowardly, but the thing to do. I would if they asked for the money, otherwise it would just look like an excuse, which, let's face it, it was. It was a couple of days after sending the form I had the phone call. It was Millie from the writing organisation. She was bubbly and infectious, the type of person I dislike, only because I would like to be that type of person. It was a phone call to tell me all about the writing retreat. With all my cynicism, I was actually getting a little bit excited. It sounded exactly what I needed and would enjoy. She even mentioned the COVID protocol. I was getting carried away with it, except I wasn't going, but was too much of a coward to tell her on the phone. Then she asked me the question I was dreading. What was my level of writing? Was I published? I answered no. Maybe if I were honest, they would not ask me to go, so I said, "I'm not really a writer." She paused for a moment. She asked, "Do I write on a regular basis?" Which I replied, "Yes." She followed with, "Am I working on something at present?" Again, in the affirmative, she laughed. "Then you're most definitely a writer." "You scared me," she continued. "I thought you might have been one of those people who talk about it." Which, to be fair, I had been. Then came the rub. Millie said she was so pleased when she received my booking because they can ensure there was an even number on the retreat and they were looking forward to meeting me. I replied with the same. I was looking forward to going. She said she'd send me the payment link and then see you next Thursday, which she said without any irony. And that was that. I was going to a writer's retreat and pretend to be a writer. The retreat was a guest house near the beach. I guess they used it a lot for these purposes. I had to book the night before the retreat too because it was an 8 a.m. start and we were to meet for breakfast. I got there and settled in my room, but I was petrified. I can remember the last time I felt so ill with nerves. I bought the wrong clothes, they will judge me, I'm not even a fucking writer. I didn't sleep well, but that's nothing new. In the morning, I was pacing the room trying to summon the courage to go down. I couldn't be late. It was only one flight of stairs. I checked my appearance the last time and decided I was as good as I'll ever be, which obviously wasn't great. Then I found my way to the kitchen. A woman came running up to me, greeting me, asking my name. This was Millie. She was a little older than I thought, around the same age as me. "Oh, I'm sorry, Millie, if you're listening to this and you're not." You were as lovely, bubbly and welcoming as you sounded on the phone. Breakfast was going to be a cut one as we had to keep our stamina up. It was going to be a long day. It sounded ominous, but it wasn't. It was going to be a long day because that's how you immerse yourself in it. It's how you get the work done. Now that part didn't scare me. It was meeting my fellow residents and wondering at what stage did they render me a fraud. It wasn't at breakfast. I think the best thing about meeting over food is there's always a topic of conversation. What's your food like? Do you eat meat? Or is it even a cooked breakfast if it doesn't include baked beans? It's not, by the way. There were 12 of us in attendance and 3 people running it. After the awkwardness of the small talk, everyone relaxed into the situation a bit, and for my part, I thought everyone seemed lovely. The other part of my reluctance was old age, but honestly, there were most age groups represented. The youngest looked to be in their mid-20s and the oldest around 70. The majority, though, were in their 40s and 50s. After the meal was finished, over tea we had to formally introduce ourselves. I hated this bit. All eyes on you as you completely forget your name and your tongue suddenly becomes too big for your mouth, so it all comes out wrong. This one we had to say our full names, where we come from, and what we wanted to achieve over the 5 days, which meant I was going to be exposed pretty quickly. I was second to speak. I said my name, where I came from, and then I paused. Not for effect. Wasn't trying to be dramatic, but I wanted this part to come out right. I said I didn't have any expectations other than being able to dedicate some time to writing and everything else was a bonus. I heard some murmurs of agreement and we moved on. I expected to hear how they were there because their agent had given them a deadline, but it wasn't like that at all. Everyone had an open mind of what they wanted to achieve. Some had already been through this process and just wanted to get their energy back into writing. Energy? I didn't understand it at the time, but that soon changed. After all the introductions were done, I expected to get the laptop out and finally start. Writing was hours away, though. We were taken into another room and given an exercise to do. In a circle, we had to keep moving by going towards someone, and when they said your name, they had to meet you for a fist bump, and then you stood in their place. The process had to go at increasing speed until we were all running around like idiots and catching our breath. Which seems crazy, but when you learn it was hugs before the pandemic, then you may consider it quite tame. Then we were allowed to sit before our guide for the programme, Millie, who took to the stage. Yes, it was a stage. A raised platform anyway, and she told us we were all superheroes. At this point, I was tired from lack of sleep. They had fed me and worn me out, so they could have said we were all carrots, and I would have said, yes, that's me. What they were actually teaching us, as we were told, was mindset. The journey I'd started on just a few months before. If you're going to be a writer, you need to be resilient. For the rejections, for the knockbacks, just for having the guts to get your story out there. I'd always known that was a problem for me. I couldn't tell you if I was the best or worst writer because I've never really put my work out there to be judged. I know I did the podcast, but that was me. It was easy to put myself out there than my actual work. I'm not going to talk more about this because nobody wants to hear about writers or the process, etc. That first day we were told how to change our stance to make ourselves feel more powerful for pitches. I know, I must pitch the book before anyone would actually read it, if I ever had a book to pitch. We were split into teams, we played games, we were anything but writers that morning, but it honestly felt so good. Freeing. We didn't get the laptops out until after lunch and then it was head down to get on with it. That was good too. To sit down and just write without distractions. Yes, we were told to put our phones away and like good little carrots, we did it. There were refreshments laid out and we could take breaks. It wasn't like a prison or something. It was just intense. Then at 7 p.m, our instructors, Millie, Paul and Tina, summed up our day, asked us how it went and told us something I hadn't known. The phone call was an audition. We had to fit into this group. But that didn't apply to me because I was the latecomer. I could see why it worked though. Everyone was really flipping lovely and it was ridiculous how close we were getting. When Tyler suggested going out for food and drink, everyone said yes and we went out to find food. Eventually got back to my room at 10 p.m. Nobody had realised I was a fraud. I was exhausted, but elated. It was day 3 when they asked us to talk about our work. I thought I was going to be sick. I'd got away with it for so long and I was really enjoying the experience. I'd never done anything like it before. Everyone was coming up with these amazing stories, then it was my turn to speak. I'd never discussed my current story with anyone. It felt like I was revealing a part of myself that I didn't want people to know. I started talking really quickly, and judging by the faces of people, I wasn't making a lot of sense. I stopped and asked if I could start again. I did. I slowly explained the story that I'd been building, and it wasn't complete, but I knew where I wanted it to go. I'm not explaining it on here, just going by the book, if it ever comes out. It was a response I got that made me nearly cry. People got it, and they were asking questions and were being enthusiastic about it. I'd never had that reaction before, never. It was the same responses that the rest of them had, you know, the real writers. I had been vulnerable and it had been okay. I wanted to hug every one of them, but I didn't. You know, COVID and all that. Except we did just that on the third night after drinks. We were taking daily COVID tests and I just had my fourth vaccination, so I was playing the odds. Even told them about a little podcast that I'd done. They all promised they'd listen, and I thought, that was really kind. But when I had the download figures a week later, I realised they actually had. Nobody told me I wasn't a real writer. I got away with it again. Day 5 was a little different. We were finishing earlier, so there was less writing time. We wrote in the morning, and after lunch it was the wrap-up. We talked about our time there, the highs, the lows. Then we were asked to put our hands up if we thought we weren't a real writer. I didn't have a choice, I'd already told Millie what I thought. So I did. But when I looked around, so did most people. I was blown away. Then she said, hands up if you think you're wasting your time. I didn't. How was this a waste of time? Nobody else did. This session on imposter syndrome is the most enlightening and the hardest to hear. I was never going to be found out because I was there. I was writing. Millie went on to say, the chances are people around you are not going to support you or understand your compulsion to write, but that's okay. Felt like she was talking directly to me. At the end, we all hugged, swapped contacts and said goodbye. Before I left, I thanked Millie for everything, told her I got so much more than I bargained for. She thanked me back, told me she'd been putting these groups together for a while and she felt like she finally got it right. I told her she did, and the rest were lovely, and I was incredibly lucky to get the final spot. Millie admitted it wasn't quite luck. 5 people had gone for that place, and I just happened to be the first person she rang. The idea was she would speak to all of us before giving the spot away. She said I was so lovely, though, she offered me the spot straight away and cancelled the others. I was lovely. Her words, not mine. All the way home, I was elated. I played music loud and sang along to it. It was late when I finally got in. I started to unpack and sort myself out. I felt hope. It was such a long time that I felt any hope, and it was good. Then the tears rolled. Tears of exhaustion. Tears from having such an amazing experience. Tears because I finally had hope that things were going to get better. I'm a grown-up. I should have known that's the time that life kicks you down Misery Avenue, past Despair Close, through to Purgatory Street, and lands you right on your arse in your completely and utterly fucked city. That's enough from me. Thank you so much for listening. It just leaves me to say, please come back. I'm not needy or anything, but do what you want. Also, a lot of this stuff is from the internet, and did you know the internet can lie? You can find me on Instagram at ExcuseTheJess, and let's do this again soon.
Excuse the Jess was written and performed by Jackie J. Sarah. It is a deliciously bright production. If you enjoyed this, please click follow and give us a 5-star review or donate via Buy Me a Coffee. All details, including full credits, can be found on the website excusethejess.com.